I'd like to continue from Luke chapter 7 this morning. Begin with verse 18 and read down to verse 35. Something of a lengthy reading, but I'd like to read it first and then follow up with my thoughts. We've read about the various healings Jesus performed in the verses leading up. Beginning with verse 18, and the disciples of John showed him all of these things, the things Jesus has been doing. John's in prison, remember, been there for some time. And John, calling unto him two of his disciples, sent them to Jesus, saying, Art thou he that should come, or look we for another? When the men were come unto him, unto Jesus, they said, John Baptist has sent us unto thee, saying, Art thou he that should come, or look we for another? And in that same hour he cured many of their infirmities and plagues, and of evil spirits, and unto many that were blind he gave sight. Then Jesus answering said unto them, Go your way, and tell John what things ye have seen and heard, how that the blind see, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and to the poor the gospel is preached. And blessed is he whosoever shall not be offended in me. And when the messengers of John were departed, he began to speak unto the people concerning John. What went ye out into the wilderness for to see? A reed shaken with the wind? But what went ye out for to see? A man clothed in soft raiment? Behold, they which are gorgeously appareled and live delicately are in king's courts. They're not in the wilderness. But what went ye out for to see? A prophet? Yea, I say unto you, and much more than a prophet. This is he of whom it was written, Behold, I send my messenger before thy face, which shall prepare thy way before thee. For I say unto you, among those that are born of women, there is not a greater prophet than John the Baptist, but he that is least in the kingdom of God is greater than he. And all the people that heard him and the publicans justified God, being baptized with the baptism of John. But the Pharisees and lawyers rejected the counsel of God against themselves, being not baptized of him. And the Lord said, Whereunto shall I liken the men of this generation, and to what are they like? They are like unto children sitting in the marketplace, and calling one to another, and is saying, We have piped unto you, and ye have not danced. We've mourned to you, and ye have not wept. For John the Baptist came neither eating bread nor drinking wine, and ye say, He hath a devil. The Son of Man is come, eating and drinking, and ye say, Behold, a gluttonous man and a winebibber, a friend of publicans and sinners. But wisdom is justified of her children. Remember this man, John the Baptist. He's probably a distant cousin of Jesus. Remember Elizabeth and Mary? He's probably seen Jesus as they were growing up on occasion. In the Gospel of John, we read about him saying, I saw him, but I didn't know he was Messiah until God told me, the Spirit told me this is the one. There's some interaction. Jesus goes to John for baptism. There's probably other times of interaction. John is aware of the miracles Jesus does and the magnificent words he speaks. He believed that this was the Messiah, God come in human flesh. He not only believed it, he lived up to his conviction and stood up for God's moral conviction when it was very unpopular and landed him in jail. He's in jail now. Life can be hard. It can be tough. It can begin to erode a person's faith. Right? Been there? probably have. If you've lived long in this world, you've probably lived that. It just keeps wearing you down and beating you up, and it seems like there's no end. The same man who said, "That's the Messiah," now in jail, after a prolonged period, says, "Was I mistaken? Is this for real?" We not only have John's questions in this passage, we have Jesus, who was a master of using focused questions to teach. And this is the perfect example of that point. John has become so discouraged, he raises the question, "Are you the one or not?" What, at this point, does John expect from Jesus? He's in prison. He's in prison for doing the right thing and for saying the right thing at the right time. And yet, there seems to be no relief. If he's Messiah, isn't he going to set things right? What does John expect? Do you think he could have expected the Messiah to come and bring judgment from heaven and relieve John and take him out of prison and judge the wicked people who put him there? Possible, right? Very possible. What does Jesus do? How does Jesus respond to John's disciples and send the message back to them? Before he even answers them, he does a number of miracles. And then he says, "You go tell John, not that I'm going to send judgment in just a few days and I'm going to break the prison open and bring you out and put you back on the banks of the river preaching, but tell John all the miracles you see. People who have been sick for a lifetime are healed. Blind people have their sight restored. Lepers, an incurable disease in the view of that day, are healed and restored to a normal life. Even the dead are raised. It just happened with the widow of Nain's son." And Jesus caps off with the icing on the cake, "The poor have the gospel preached to them." Tell John those words. Oh, yes. Kindness, healing, encouragement, and love, not judgment. John, that's what you need to remember. The kingdom of the Messiah is about those things, not about war. And then as soon as John's disciples leave, Jesus turns to the audience that is there with him and John's disciples who've heard all that's gone on. And these people had left their wilderness or their homes and gone to the wilderness to hear John. As I recall, this Jesus is speaking these words in the region of Capernaum. That's in Galilee. John's preaching was in the Jordan Valley in Judah. If they went from Galilee to the Jordan Valley to hear John, probably 30 to 40 miles. They didn't have rapid transit. They didn't have the gospel bus to hop on. You know how they got that 40 miles? They walked. Would they walk 30 or 40 miles to sit down by the riverside and see a little straw sticking up on the side of the river and the wind blowing it? Really? Would they walk 40 miles to see that? Would they walk 40 miles into the wilderness to see a man dressed like he ought to be in a king's house? You're not going to find that in the wilderness, are you? And you sure didn't find it with John. Why did you go to hear John? Jesus is getting to the heart of the matter, isn't he? And then he reveals the real heart of the problem with a lot of these people. In verse 31 and reading down, how shall I describe this generation? Like children playing on a playground. Well, I sang and you didn't. I wanted to play skip rope and you wanted to play tag. I wanted to play on the slide and you wanted to play hide and seek. Kids playing. The religion of God and the worship of God in the lives of his people is not a child's game, Jesus is teaching these people. And think about it. There is one colossal elephant in the room point that is missing in all of this. Isn't church and worship supposed to be about us and God? And all these people are doing is bouncing back and forth on each other and not even thinking about God. Is there social fellowship in church? Absolutely there is. But that doesn't mean that much if we leave God out of the equation. It's all empty if that's all there is to it. These people were leaving out the most important ingredient. Jesus closes my reading in verse 35 with a fascinating point. Wisdom is justified of her children. What does this mean? I want to illustrate what Jesus is talking about with two verses, 29 and 30. Jesus is describing, after he has sent word and told the people who John really is, he's a prophet, but he is also that unique person who was the forerunner, the herald of Jesus, the King coming, the Messiah's arrival. So he's a prophet plus a whole lot more. And yet Jesus says the very least person in God's kingdom is greater than John. John saw in prophecy, in anticipation, you and I live after the resurrection and the glorious ascension of our Lord, the fulfillment and the manifestation of the very power of God in that one who came. We have a greater message and a greater blessing because of that. Verse 29, what Jesus is doing, or what Luke is doing here, is he's giving us a summary of John's ministry. There are two classes of people, as you will very well recall, who reacted to John's preaching. One group were pricked in the heart, were cut, repented, confessed their sins, and were baptized. The other group rejected John's message and were not baptized. So verse 29, pardon me. And all the people that heard him, that heard John, and the publicans, even tax collectors, we would say even IRS agents, IRS auditors, you know, the guy that comes to your home and looks at your taxes and says, you owe, not popular people, not at all. People that heard him and the publicans justified God being baptized with the baptism of John. The word justified God doesn't mean they made God righteous. Justification is a declaration. They declared God to be righteous because they believed the message God gave John and preached to them. When we hear the gospel preached and we believe it and we act on it, we justify God because we take that message seriously. If we hear the message and give it a polite okay and go our merry way and it doesn't change our life and affect us, we're not justifying God, are we? Not at all. And then verse 30. But the Pharisees and lawyers, not attorneys per se, lawyers in the spiritual sense of the people who interpreted the fine points of Moses' law in the synagogues and the temple in Jerusalem. The Pharisees and lawyers rejected the counsel of God against themselves being not baptized of him. They heard it. They rejected it. But it wasn't that they merely rejected what John said. They rejected the counsel of God. You've heard me talk about the King James Bible, alternate readings, the footnotes in the margin. I would not own, or buy at least, I wouldn't spend money on a King James Bible without that center column with those footnotes included, the alternate readings. And what these represent is that the King James translators said, and they agreed with the translation we read, but they said, here is an equally possible meaning that you should consider. And often those things, those footnotes and those alternate readings provide gems. This one is fascinating. The word against has a translator's footnote and an alternate reading. They rejected the counsel of God within themselves. Does that ring a bell for you? There were some people that John addressed that he called a generation of vipers. But what I think Luke is really talking about here is there were people who were authorities in the synagogue, in the temple, who heard John preach, and they weren't baptized, but there was something down here that was pounding in their heart and giving them a sense of counsel that this is God's word and this is what you ought to do. That's the people Jesus is describing here, not the snakes, as we would describe them, but the people who had that sense of God in them, but refused to do anything about it. We live in an age where a lot of modern Christians will say there's no such thing. If you do that, then you're just not even saved. That's not what we read in our Bible or what the Bible teaches. There are people today. Let me give you an example. Years and years ago, the eastern part of the United States, anything east of the Mississippi River, at some time during the week, could turn on their radio and hear a Primitive Baptist preaching, a sermon or preaching. I talked with a man. He actually came to a Santa Paula meeting and preached for us on Sunday morning. He grew up in another denomination. He studied himself into the doctrines of grace. He's still pastoring a church in the other denomination. But he's beginning to find things in the Bible that don't match what he's been taught in seminary and what this church represents. A friend of his says, you know, there's this very powerful radio station, and at 10:30 on Sunday night, you ought to turn it on and listen, because there's a preacher that has some things you might be interested in hearing. It's a Primitive Baptist preacher. And he turned it on and he listened. And he made a point next Sunday night of turning it on and listening. And the next Sunday, and the next Sunday, and the next Sunday. And he described, he was on this particular Sunday night driving a group of young people after a youth meeting at the church. He was driving them home. And it came that time, and he turned down the radio and turned on this preacher. And some of the young people in the car ridiculed what this preacher was preaching. And he scolded them and said, you need to listen. You need to listen. That man became a Primitive Baptist preacher. I picked him up at his aunt's home in Pasadena and drove him to church that Sunday morning. And we were talking on the way to church. And he said, Joe, you would be amazed at the number of preachers in other denominations that are just like I was. They'll never change. They'll never leave their church. But on Sunday night, they listen to that preacher. And if you ask them privately what they really believe, they'll tell you that's what they believe. I think that's exactly what Luke is describing here. People that had the counsel of God within them, but didn't respond as they should have to it. Lest we judge them too harshly. Have you and I ever ignored the counsel of God that we felt within us? Yeah, I confess. It's how we learn from those moments and how we correct them that makes the difference in our faith. To deny that you've ever had such a moment would be equivalent to denying that John the Baptist had the moment he had in prison when he questioned Jesus. It's a reality you live with in this broken, twisted, unfriendly world to your faith. Let's take the question box thoughts we've been looking at. What do you expect from your faith? Seriously. Not just when you're in church on Sunday morning. What do you expect from your faith on Thursday when things have not been good? What do you expect when you come to church on Sunday morning? Do you expect the example of Jesus, of children playing in the market and chatting back and forth and having fellowship and never thinking about God? Is that what you expect? Or have you reached that point where God and serving and ministering to others and helping people that can never repay us, but they need help, so we give it to them, means more than me getting my way? Where are we? What do we expect? This is a searching question. It kind of, as Kevin sometimes teases me, Joe, you stopped preaching and started meddling today. I'm doing a little meddling, I confess. What do we expect? I think we need to listen to the lesson Jesus is teaching us here. It's a lesson that's important when we're in church on Sunday morning, but it's a lesson that's important when you spend 6 months in a hospital, Brother Jim. What do you expect? When you have gone into the doctor's office and instead of saying, you're healthy, go home and I'll see you in a year for your annual checkup, the doctor says, there's some things not right. You need to have all this battery of tests and I need to see you as soon as those tests are back. Does that make you feel comfortable? What do you expect? Well, the Lord hasn't promised to save us from all the craziness of this world, but his counsel in us tells us whatever we see, whatever we face in life, will not be alone. He will be with us. If we have a heavy load, he'll lift on his side and make it lighter. If we go through a dark place, he's got a bright light to help us see through it. If we're hurting, he reminds us, you want to compare your pain to what I experienced at Calvary? To what I experienced the night before when they lashed my back so deeply that my rib bones were open to the public or to that vision, to the eye? Do you want to talk about pain? And think about it. They lashed his back that night with a whip and the cutting edges on the ends of the whip. Where did they put him the next morning? On a rough, full of splinters, wooden cross. And where was he most in contact with that cross his back. You want to talk about pain? I was there, but I'll help you with your pain. Whatever you need, I'm going to be there to help you get through it. And you see, the more we learn those truths and that reality, the more it begins to help us shape our life based on the counsel of God within and the affirmation of that counsel in His book. We need to ask those questions and ponder our own answers.